The following programming is sponsored by Lou Scheinfeld. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Major gut check here for the Philadelphia 76ers. McBride. And that's it. The Sixers stay alive. The Knicks could not shut the door.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your family to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports Show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Sports Complex. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so you can check us out. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me, as always, from his sports bunker in Villanova, he is our guide, mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports and author of the recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's greatest showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. How you doing, Lou?
Well, I'm doing great, and I like that intro, although I think the announcer must have been from New York. He wasn't very excited about the Sixers winning. That I was saying to myself, I wish that was Game 7. That would be a fantastic Game 7. Yeah. But what a trip it's been, Doug. I mean, I'm worn out. I'm exhausted. Yeah. I'm cursing. I'm yelling. I'm drinking. And then at the end, every game has been down to the wire.
Yeah. And it's in typical Philadelphia fashion. And they let themselves get down by seeming insurmountable odds. And do they claw their way back tonight at 9 o'clock? If I can stay awake till then, I will find out.
All right.
Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, Susan Baxter, off this week. Coming up today, the man with 600 collegiate basketball wins in 30 years, Philly coaching legend Fran Dunphy, is going to be on the Museum of Sports Show for the very first time today. And in case you've forgotten, as I sort of did at the beginning of the week, it is Kentucky Derby weekend with the race at just about 7 o'clock on Saturday. So we're going to have everything you need to know to place your bets with our regular friend, Camden County Commissioner and racing guru and handicapper Jeffrey Nash is going to be here. And we're going to have what's hot and what's not and what's affordable in the sports memorabilia market with our own king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection. Nick DiPaccia Jr. is going to be here. But up first, and Lou's been chomping at the bit on this one, Knicks fans have been infiltrating the Sixers home games at an obnoxious level. And of course, you're allowed to, you know, buy tickets wherever you get them for whatever you can afford. But Lou Scheinfeld is having none of this, right, Lou?
That's true. And I'm going to have less of it. And I want to tell you what you just said was redundant. When you say obnoxious and Knicks fans, that is redundancy. Yeah. The New York fans and the Boston fans who invade our sacred stands, our games, and we would never do that to them. Maybe the Eagles do it in other cities, but in an arena, it's kind of different, and especially if you're losing and they're piling it on. And the fans are, they're high-fiving and they're effing this and they're cursing that. And then they're celebrating. And I got to tell you, it did my heart good that the game in New York the other night when they were up 96-90 with seconds left and they are high-fiving and dancing in the stands. And then they were crying minutes later. It was really great. But look, these people go on StubHub and they buy tickets. These games are sold out, but a lot of 76ers ticket holders sell their tickets to recoup some of the money that they lay out for season tickets during the year.
Yeah, I've got a neighbor who's a longtime Eagles season ticket holder, and he will do that depending upon the Eagles' fortunes during the season and whether or not he can get to the game.
Right, but these folks can't get tickets to the Garden because that's really tough. And a lot of them don't live that close to New York anyway. They're in the Trenton area, you know, they're in
exactly central Jersey, North Lehigh Valley, like the eastern part of the Lehigh Valley. So we were kind of talking in the pregame with our producer, Sam Whalen, about, you know, we just sort of assume that there can be a cap put on visiting ticket sales, but that's not true in the current marketplace. Anybody who wants and can afford tickets, by the which is a lot different from kind of, you know, in your day with Flyers, Eagles, Sixers a few decades back. You guys handled ticket sales a little differently for visiting fans.
Well, back in those days, other than season tickets, a lot of ticket sales were on the phone sales. You called in, you gave your credit card number over the phone, and you got your tickets mailed to you or left, if it was close to the game time, at the gate. But when I was with the Eagles and we played the Giants, and the league seemed to love scheduling 4 p.m. games with the Giants and Eagles. And if you know the parking lot fills up starting at 6 a.m., and by 4 p.m., everybody's drunk and ready to fight. And the 800, 700 level at the vet, it was nothing but wall-to-wall fights. And we asked the league not to schedule that. And they said, look, Giants-Eagles is a big thing nationally. So anyway, we told the ticket office, do not fill any mail orders or phone orders from 212, which is New York area code, or 201, which is North Jersey. And that helped. That cut down. We told them there are no tickets available. So.
See, I think that's lovely. But now it's just such a wild automated market. I guess there could be, there's no controlling it.
No, you just go on StubHub and anybody can buy a ticket if they have the money. But this has been going on for years with Boston and New York coming into Philadelphia. They are obnoxious. They don't necessarily want to fight. They just want to mouth off. Several years ago, I was sitting at the 76ers game with Ed Snyder, watching the Celtics play at the Wells Fargo Center. And there was about 150 Boston fans all massed together behind the Celtics bench. And they sounded as loud as the other 20,000 people in the building. And Ed said to me, what can we do to shut these people up? Well, we were losing. And then we came back and now we're winning. And there's only a minute left in the game. And we've got it wrapped up. And I put up on the scoreboard, I don't operate the scoreboard, but I gave it to somebody to put on the scoreboard with Ed's blessing. And I put 76ers thanks Celtics fans for attending tonight's game. Come back for the playoffs and enjoy another loss. Well, that went viral. I don't know if we had viral back in 2013, but maybe we did. But we got a call from the league. They weren't too happy about that.
But I love that sort of thing. I almost wish there was a little more antagonism. But I, as you say, it's become such a corporate culture now.
Yeah.
And everything is so laundered and filtered and very, just diplomatic, I guess, is the right
word.
Well,
there was another case back in the 70s when the Boston Bruins were playing the Flyers at the Spectrum. And Derek Sanders, is that his name? Derek Sanderson, the bad guy, and he got a penalty and he's in the box and some fans leaned over and poured beer on him. Well, he stands up to protest. Yeah. They pull him over the glass into the stands and they're pounding on his back and his head with throwing punches at him. The whole Boston team comes across the ice over the glass of the penalty box into the stands and they're now fighting. There's 28 to 18 Boston Bruins players fighting with our fans, and they're going row by row up towards us, where Ed Snyder and I were sitting in the super box.
You guys were all ready for them, right?
And the guards come break it up, and they're escorting these two fans out of the building, and Ed Snyder jumps up, runs out into the corridor, brings them into our suite, and sits them right next to him. So I put up on the scoreboard, let's see, what did I put up? Flyers fans involved in fight are alive and well. 18 Excellent. Bruins couldn't hurt them. Well, that did not play well in Boston. And Ed Snyder got a call from Clarence Campbell, the commissioner of the National Hockey League and said that was reprehensible. Is this, was that, and you should fire whoever did that. Ed said, absolutely, I'm going to fire him as soon as I hang up. Comes in my office, he says, hey, Lou, you're fired. Want to go to lunch? True story. True story.
Those were the days, how we missed them. And hopefully it's all coming back with a Dan Hilferty at the helm of Comcast.
Yeah, well, we're working on that.
Exactly. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution so that you can be part of Philly's sports shrine. You can also buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, and just go to themuseumofsports.org. Lou will pen a special greeting. Portion of the proceeds go to the museum. When we come back, college coaching icon Fran Dunphy, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Perrant, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vi Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
In there, separating, missed it. Buchanan, 2 seconds. Bishop for the win. No! LaSalle survives.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and the Museum of Sports Facebook Live page is brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our guest today, you see him there in the Zoom box. He is an icon of Philadelphia college basketball. He is the winningest coach in Philadelphia Big Five history. And in his second season out of retirement as a head coach at LaSalle, a two-sport athlete himself at LaSalle in basketball and baseball. He later made head coaching stops at University of Pennsylvania with 10 Ivy League titles and succeeded the legendary John Chaney at Temple with countless NCAA tournament appearances. A member of the LaSalle, Penn, and Philadelphia Sports Writers Halls of Fame with 600 wins in 30 years. A huge first-time Museum of Sports show welcome to Mr. Fran Dunphy. Fran, how are you?
Good, Doug. Thanks for having me. You and Lou, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, Fran, as I was mentioning in the break, last time you and I saw each other, you were the keynote speaker for the Take a Breather Foundation, which grants wishes for kids and adults with cystic fibrosis, a wonderful gala at the Overbrook Golf Club in Villanova. And I think, as I mentioned that night, I think you were after your first game and just before your second game where you beat Northeastern, as I recall, that next night.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what night it was. And it was we did open the season. I do recall that, but yeah, it was great to be there. And
well, God bless you for coming out, and boy, did they appreciate it. And you were starting your second season out of retirement. I mean, how were you feeling about LaSalle's prospects at that point in the season? You know, you'd been at the helm for a season and now you're starting the second one.
Yeah. I mean, we thought we had a chance to be okay. And we hit a tough stretch in the middle of our season. We got it back toward the end, which was great. We won a game in the conference tournament, which is always a positive. We had won two games last year and we were hoping to duplicate that at least, if not go further, but it didn't. So it's these days, college basketball has changed dramatically, Doug. And so the transfer portal is more or less a free agency of sorts.
Oh, yeah.
And the NIL there's no amount of money. There's no salary cap. So it's an amazing time in college athletics, in particular college basketball. Obviously, we're involved with that. So it's roster management is probably the key thing that we all try to do at this time of year. We've lost guys to the transfer portal. We've gotten a couple of guys in. We need a few more. So we'll see how it all comes out.
You finished the regular season above, I think, a game above 500.
Actually,
and you had that first round nail biter, 61-60 over in the Atlantic 10 Conference tournament over George Washington. And I think there were people who were starting to have visions of like Cinderella story. Were those visions dancing in your head, or was like, I don't know?
Well, we actually finished 15-16 regular season. We won won a game in the conference tournament that brought us to 16-16, and we lost in the second round. So we did some really good things, and we needed to not fall down a little bit during the middle of the season, and maybe we could have gotten ourselves toward that 20 win mark, but would have taken a little better play than we had, probably a little better coaching than I gave to them as well. So we'll see. We have a new group guys coming in this year. We'll have to replace four or five guys, and it's not easy.
It's not only not easy. It's almost impossible. You start out with a whole new crew of people, and some of the people that you count on and who are fan favorites, that they're gone, and it's just crazy times. And it's a shame that all this is happening. I don't want to say towards the end of your career, but in your senior years. I mean, after going through what you've gone through, I think it's amazing that LaSalle can stay at the level that they are in the A-10 and nationally with an enrollment that is a half or one third of the other Big Five schools and a lot of schools that they play. So it's a tribute. It's a tribute to your athletic department and to your tutelage.
It's what we do is, you know, we try to get the best student athlete we can. And we do oftentimes talk about it, that we don't have a lot of sizzle, but we have a great deal of substance. And that's what we sell, you know, the education and the opportunity to play some pretty good basketball in a very good league. So all of those things is something that we throw out there to a prospective student athlete and hope that they see it again, an opportunity.
You mentioned the transfer portal and having some, you know, casualties through that. You also mentioned name, image, and likeness. Has that started to become a factor, a cost component? And do you see behaviors and decisions now being made on the part of student athletes to, you know, transfer somewhere else where they get a bigger, you know, cut of the name, image, and likeness thing than they would? I mean, what are you seeing the impact of that? Because money is starting to become the driving force. I hope not.
Well, money is certainly an important part of this as the kids think about where they're going to go. The other part is what the opportunity is. Am I going to play at that next level? Am I going pretty far away, so I'm not going to see my family that much? There's a lot of things that will go into those opportunities. But the thing that I think drives a lot of kids, the money is certainly there. The other thing that they all want is that if you can promise them that they're going to be in the NBA, that's a great opportunity right there to get a kid who maybe wasn't given that same chance at another institution. So that's what they all want. They want to be professional basketball players, and And along the way, if they can parlay this into some extra income, they want to do that. And I think for a coach, I don't think you ever begrudge for them to do better financially. However, what you really want for them is to get this education, to play really good basketball, to have the experience of being on a team, as we talked about before we went on here.
Yeah.
But there's anything more important than being on a team in life. And we're all on teams, whether you're on
exactly
a sports team or your family's a team, any of those things are critical to this. But being on a team is awesome. And but the kids, they want opportunity to play, but they also want a chance to make some significant monies as well. And we're in the game, but we're just not in the game at a very high level.
There's some great things happening with Sal under President Allen and your athletic director. You're getting a new arena. It's going to be renamed from the great Tom Gola arena. And baseball is coming back. And I know that's got to be near and dear to your heart, having been a fantastic, famous double play combination with Bill Bradshaw
on the Sal team.
Yep. Around second and short, you guys were magicians.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Lou. I'm not sure I was much of a magician. I was the I hit a solid 225. Bradshaw, on the other hand, was probably close to 400. He was a fabulous baseball player. Yeah. Just fabulous. And I could feel that a little bit, but his game was just extraordinary. But I just played the 1 year, my junior year at LaSalle in baseball, and it was a absolute fun. And again, I wish I had hit a little better for average. Once they threw that curveball at me, I was struggling. I had to cheese, but couldn't hit the curve.
Yeah, Fran, you know, you came out of retirement and you finished your second season with LaSalle. How conflicted were you about whether or not to come out of retirement? In some cases, it's, do they waive enough, you know, put enough zeros in the offer? Or in some cases, it's just how much fire do you have left? What were some of the things that went back and forth in your head about, do I want to do this again?
Well, I think for my alma mater asking me to come back and help out. And that's what it was.
Yeah.
So for me, I just appreciated what LaSalle gave to me. The opportunity to be a scholarship athlete in basketball and get an education. And then they asked me to come back as an assistant coach in 1979. They asked me to come back again in 1985 to have another stint as an assistant coach. And then the opportunity presented itself this 2 years ago. And I was conflicted. I wasn't sure it was the right thing to do. And I have this attitude that I think we all get our chances. We all get our opportunities, and I had mine. I had plenty of opportunities. So, and it's really, now it's for somebody else, and pretty soon that'll happen here at LaSalle, and somebody else will get this chance and then see what they can do. So again, I've had my chances, but I'm so appreciative and grateful to my alma mater that I would do anything for it.
Yeah, and now this is the part of the segment here, Fran, and Lou had asked, and you sent me a little sampler there in a video text of what is in Fran Dunphy's personal sports memorabilia collection. And is it one of those things that you just sort of got stuff, or did you seek some stuff out? Were you a collector to begin with, or just because of your career, stuff just sort of comes to you?
Yeah, I think more the latter than anything else. And I showed to you in my office here, I don't know if I can, let me see if I can show it to those folks that are out there. You can't see this one on the wall over here, but that's Larry Cannon. So I have five jerseys in my office here that also are in the arena. And they have special meaning for me because the first is Larry Cannon. I played 2 years with him. The second is Lionel Simmons, and I coached him for 2 years. The third is Michael Brooks, and I coached him for 1 year. The fourth is Kenny Durrett, and I played with him for 2 years. And the fifth is Tom Gola, and I played for him for 2 years. So every one of those shirts is very, very meaningful. The careers that these guys had were extraordinary, and just so appreciative of what they meant to me as a LaSallian as a coach and having the opportunity to be around those guys.
How did you get those jerseys? Did you just take them? Did you steal them from them? How did you get those?
So once it happened, where these guys were honored, there for the honoring of Kenny Durrett and the honoring of Larry Cannon and Tom Gohl, I played for again, and Simmons and Brooks. I was not there when they got their jerseys retired, but it's a pretty special grouping of guys. And so the shirts were here, and I asked our equipment guy, Mike Stringfellow, to hook me up with putting them in frames, and he did. And it's just I just appreciate that corner that's over there, and it means a lot to me.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Have you ever had those appraised? I always ask this because we will usually do the shock the guest thing with our King of Sports Collectibles, and he'll do a spot appraisal. And we've had a few folks fall out of their chest. Have you ever had those appraised?
Never have. And if they did, and it was a lot of money that was coming, then I would give it to LaSalle in a heartbeat. So it's their, and these guys belong to LaSalle, and everything about it is just very important to me from a remembrance standpoint, that these guys were such phenomenal players. And of course, Gola coached us. He coached myself and Larry Cannon and Kenny Durrett and amongst others. And so whatever they're worth, LaSalle has it.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. Lou, I know you had a couple more things. And don't forget to unmute, Lou.
Hi, it was perfect. You were still at Temple back in, like, what was it, 2016, I think, when the Southwest Philly floater carried LaSalle to a victory on a national stage. And that was such a wonderful moment for LaSalle and LaSalle basketball. And you must have had mixed emotions at that time, but you probably were very happy for LaSalle.
Very much so. John Giannini did a great job of putting that team together, and Tyrone Garland was the Southwest Philly floater, and had some really good players. They did a terrific job that year, and I'm very proud of LaSalle and what it accomplished there, and very proud of John Giannini and what he did as the basketball coach here.
What do you see, Fran, before we go? I mean, Lou mentioned some of the new kind of capital expansion, capital improvements coming online. Is there sort of a new energy there? Is it the Fran Dunphy fired energy with LaSalle now, where it's going to be the new venue and lots of other things that, you know, maybe they wouldn't have thought of a few years ago?
Well, it's really was a those people that were here a few years ago put all that idea together, and now it's just coming to fruition. So I would love to say that everybody's rallying around me, but the reality is it's not. I think everybody here is rallying around LaSalle, and we have an opportunity to improve our place where we play. It would be seating 360 degrees around, so that it's just a better atmosphere that will be put forth as we play games starting next year. And just everybody's excited by it. I think Dan Allen has energized a lot of people here at LaSalle. I think Ashwin Puri has done a really good job of being the AD as well. So I'm one of a number of coaches here trying to do the best job they can with putting, representing LaSalle University in the Atlantic 10 and seeing how we can do.
Well, you've been a hell of a representative and an ambassador and a presence. And, you know, we'd love to have you back when we start getting close to the start of the next season. So will you come back and see us with the all the secrets?
Anytime, Doug. And I don't know how many secrets I'll have, but we'll have you guys come to a game and come, maybe even come to that first game that we play here at LaSalle.
Oh, we'd love it. Absolutely. Philly coaching icon and all around good guy, Fran Dunphy. We can't thank you enough for being on the Museum of Sports show. I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get you on. I know I was kind of begging you as you were heading out the door at that gala, and I'm like, damn it, I didn't get to him fast enough. But Fran, thank you so much.
Anytime.
Yeah, thanks, Fran.
You got it, Lou. All the best to you, my friend.
Thank you. When we come back, it's Kentucky Derby Saturday, and we're going to have all the inside handicapper stuff from our horse guru, Jeff Nash, when the Museum of Sports Show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in a couple of minutes.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
These two stride for stride as they come to the final furlong. Authentic is dragging in. Tis the law all out to get by him. Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the law still trying to get him. Authentic, tis the law. Here's the wire. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
We're back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We're brought to you by every week by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Our next guest, perhaps best known as Camden County Commissioner and Vice Chair of the Delaware River Port Authority, but he's also one hell of a horse race handicapper with his own website, Fastlane Handicapper. And we love having him back. It's sort of our annual tradition. And here with his Kentucky Derby sure thing bet advice is, please welcome back to the show, Mr. Jeffrey Nash. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. You know, they always say that the Kentucky Derby, the Run for the Roses, it's the first leg of the Triple Crown. It's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, whether it is or not. But it's still kind of exciting because it's hours of buildup for 2 minutes of, most folks are still semi-sober at that point. but as I said, it's the first leg of the Triple Crown, and you've got, I think there's 20 horses that are vying for, it's a $3.1 million purse. And, the thing we always ask you is, are you as excited this year as you were last and the year before? And, is there anything more exciting? Because you keep the ones you see in the odds list there is Fierceness, Sierra Leone, Catching Freedom. I don't know if that's changed since this morning when I've looked.
That's where it is. Am I as excited? I am always excited a few days before the Kentucky Derby. For a person who loves horse racing, this is the Super Bowl, the Grand Prix. This is the magic moment in sports.
How many horses do you have entered this year?
Yeah, I was just going
to
say.
Yeah, I have a few horses, but I decided not to enter them because the purse wasn't big enough for me.
I'm with you. You're a purist.
So before we get into the handicapping stuff. You are a breeder and a racer in your own right. Just for those who may not be initiated, sort of what was your history going back, and how did you get into that business? Were you a horse guy as a kid? How did it happen?
Well, it all comes down to my dad, who also made me a Knicks fan. I'm sorry to say.
I'm amazed you said that.
Speaking of the exciting 2 minutes in sports, it had to be the last game.
Exactly.
So my parents were divorced, and my dad would pick my sister and I up to uh, for visitation, and he would take us to the racetrack with his buddies. So I'd sit there while they're drinking and smoking, and he would drop my sister and me off at the house. And instead of saying, "I love you, I'll see you next week," he would say, "Don't tell your mother." So that's the background of my love for horse racing. Had to do with my dad.
Yeah, but you have kind of parlayed that into like a little mini empire.
If you call some slow horses an empire, yes.
Stop.
No, we do it for fun. When we put together these partnerships, we never use the I word, investment, because it is strictly for fun. And we get a bunch of guys together. We buy, we form a partnership for each of the horses. We have one that's running at Penn National with our trainer, Ellen McClellan, who is an outstanding trainer at that track. And hopefully she'll work miracles with our horse, Cowboy Jim, who should be running in mid-May. And then we have a three-year-old that's going to run at Aqueduct soon. He's a New York bred named Curlin Tussle. And we just had a baby.
Congratulations.
Babies. Thank you. We handed out cigars, but we have a little filly named Lucky Luna. And she's a beautiful filly at Brightview Farms in New Jersey.
Wow. Oh, my God. Do you ever, with the addition of a new one, do you get like, as I was asking Fran Dunphy in the previous segment, you know, do you get sort of like visions of Cinderella stories dancing in your head? Is this the one? This is the one.
Right.
That's what we do. And that's why we do it. Because it could be Smarty Jones or California Chrome, or
you don't know.
You never know until they run. So far, I have not lived that dream, but it's exciting nonetheless.
What are you looking for Saturday?
Yeah.
I'd like to make money, but I get great joy in handicapping this and other races. This race is my favorite, obviously, because the website is fairly popular. We get a lot of hits throughout the country, and we've had great success. I had a few friends of mine who are great handicappers. A couple of them had Mage last year, which was a long shot to win. So the website gives some options, but I love handicapping. It's like problem solving. It's like solving a mystery, and you put $2 on the horse that you pick and hope you win.
So look at Fierceness Sierra Leone Catching Freedom. That's Win Place Show, I guess, as of the last time I looked.
Yeah, those are the three top favorites. It's really. I look at the chart. There's so many variables, so you don't really know. In this race, based on the charts, Fierceness looks unstoppable. The horse's victory in the Florida Derby was incredible. And last year, to wrap up his two-year-old campaign, he won the Breeders' Cup juvenile race by 6 lengths. And I got to tell you, he looks phenomenal. But there are variables that go into handicapping that make they give me some concern about the horse.
So what do you see that if you're reserving a little bit of full throated endorsement? I mean, what's bugging you? Or you have to go to the website to find out.
Yeah, no, you can go to the website. But it's the fact that he needs to run a clean race. He has run several times. His races are outstanding, as I mentioned. But when he doesn't, when things don't go well, he packs up his cards and goes home. He doesn't run. He doesn't finish second. He'll run out of the money. And in a race like the Kentucky Derby, where you have 20 horses in a cavalry charge, bumping and bruising from beginning to end, if something goes wrong for Fierceness, I'm concerned that he's going to back off. And when you back off in a race like this, when most talented horses in the world, you'll get into trouble and you can finish out of the money. I don't see that happening. I think that he is going to have a clean trip, and I think he'll run well.
I've watched that last year's race at least a dozen times, and I still can't get over how that horse weaved and juked and jived its way along the rail, then outside, and then in the middle of the pack, and just kept on coming. And I thought that was one of the greatest races I've ever seen.
You're right, Lou. It was great. What's in the website, I give an analysis of the 10 last Kentucky Derbies. And I think history does repeat itself. You have to look at how those races were run and why the horse that won was able to win. In the race that you're mentioning, and even the race before that, and when Rich Strike won as an 80-1 long shot, the times, the early pace was extraordinarily fast. And it allowed for horses who are running that fast to tire as they hit the stretch, and it allows for the closers to overtake those tired horses. If you have a race with a slower pace, like Fierceness had in the Florida Derby, then the horse that runs up front is not going to be as pressed and therefore has more juice and more gas in the tank as it hits the stretch to the winner's circle.
So much like there are head case athletes, in the case of Fierceness, that's a head case horse.
Yeah, it's a head case horse who is enormously talented. It's not a big horse, but a very muscular horse. I like the story of Fierceness too. There's a guy named Mike Rapoli who owns Fierceness. We grew up in New York City at about the same time. I went to law school and he sold vitamin water out of the trunk of his car.
Huh.
I wish I had done that, because he sold that company for $1 billion and now owns some of the best horses in the world, and I'm still working betting handicapping. So Mike Rapoli is always someone I've watched. His success is outstanding. He's a very generous guy. He owns this horse, and last year he owned Forte. Forte was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby. And the day of the Derby had to scratch because of a minor injury to that horse. And it must have been heartbreaking to Mike Rapoli and his family. So this year he has the favorite again. And I think if fate will have it, he will be successful in this race.
So before we go here, you're still looking at Fierceness, Sierra Leone, Catching Freedom. Who is your, the proverbial dark horse? Who's your sleeper candidate? If somebody wants to cash in on some of those long odds, who would you tell them?
Yeah. What I would say, though, before I give you my long shot, and I'm feeling pretty good about my long shot. The long shot is Domestic Product, the 15 horse. But what I tell people who read my site to do is to box a horse and include an all bet, meaning that you take Fierceness, you box it with all the other horses in the race. And here's why. Since for the last 10 years, the average payout for the trifecta at the Kentucky Derby on a $1 bet has exceeded $4,000.
Oh, my God.
That's right. So, of course, that includes Rich Strike. That trifecta paid, I think it was $14,000 for a dollar bet. But on the average, the average over 10 years, the average is over $4,000. So what I have done, and I won that that trifecta when Rich Strike won in 2022. What I do is I take the two horses that I like the most, and I box them with a dollar box for $6 with every horse in the race. So it's six times 18, whatever that comes out to is the cost of the bet. But it could pay, as I've said, over $4,000. And I do the same with the superfector, except it gets very expensive. So I take the horse that I like on top, and I'm going to take Fierceness. I'll take two other horses that I like and do it with an all. So I'll key the Fierceness with two horses I like and all other horses. And that is also six times 18. And if you hit that superfecta, you're going to be doing very well.
Oh, God, I'm doing that all bet thing. Post time is 6:57 p.m. Eastern this Saturday. And you can get all of this insider information in great detail on Jeff Nash's website, FastLaneHandicapper.com. FastLaneHandicapper.com. Cameron County Commissioner, horse breeder, and the mind behind FastLaneHandicapper.com, Jeff Nash, thank you, as always, for getting us, getting the juices flowing. And remember, everybody, all bet. Jeff says all bet. You'll win $4,000. Thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank always you, good. Always good to see you. Hey, when we come back, our King of Sports collectibles with the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Now available.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports Show brought to you, as always, by the logo of all logos, the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. You can see them there on Facebook Live. Up next, that is our king of sports collectibles, whose family is the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, valued well in excess of $35 million. And he is our proud partner in the Museum of Sports, Mr. Nick Depatche Jr. Hi, Nick.
How's it going, guys?
Doing exceptionally well. As I was mentioning to you, we just had Jeff Nash on, who's got his FastLaneHandicapper.com, Fast Race, Fast, I got to go back and look, I can't screw that up. What was it? What did I say, Lou? I had it. FastLane, where the hell is it? Yeah, FastLane, FastLaneHandicapper.com. And so he was picking, I think, Fierceness, what the hell? Yeah, Fierceness, Sierra Leone, and Catching Freedom. And so I always ask you, you know, every time this year, is there still a lot of, you know, horse race or triple crown memorabilia floating around out there? And what of it do you guys have in your collection?
Unfortunately, it is limited. The popularity of horse racing, while it still garners a lot of viewers and attendance to the actual race, it's not as much as it was in the 70s, in the 60s, and even earlier. They had a drought, obviously, between Triple Crown winners. And then we had, I think, two in a row in recent years, about probably less than 5 years ago. But it's not on par in the collectible market with the major sports like baseball, basketball, football, hockey, boxing. However, we do have Seabiscuit's cooling blanket in
That's
the museum.
That's right. I forgot about that.
And we have it on top of a statue of a horse, which is located high up. You have to kind of crank your neck to look at it. And I know Lou brought some pictures. He was at the museum. I caught him at the very tail end of his trip employees who's helping put the museum together, he took Lou and whisked him away to the office here at Franklin Cardio before I got there. So I caught Lou when he came back. But what did you think, Lou?
Well, I was impressed. I mean, anybody who you could spend 10 hours walking around looking at everything, and you're right about looking up. But I did see the blanket on the horse. And
you'll get to see that. Oh, that's
very,
wonderful.
Very impressive. It's a famous horse, and the blanket is right there. And look, New Jersey, right near where your museum is going to be, Garden State Racetrack was a premier venue for many, many years, and burned down, and then 77 or whenever that was, and then was rebuilt like the Taj Mahal. And didn't do that well financially, and then it's gone. But
the little guardhouse is left. They're fighting to keep the little guardhouse up front.
I read
gatehouse.
That. Yes, yeah. I had a couple horses too with Buddy Ryan when he was coach of the Eagles. He and
that
Harry Gamble and
fact.
I had had some horses, and Buddy was really into horses. And we broke even. We got out of the house. That was good.
did Buddy and you ride the horses at any point?
He rode the horses. He rode the players. He rode the press. He rode the owner.
Yeah, really. Well, you so mentioned
what's going on. I mean, it's very exciting. I think Doug will be amazed to see what you have. So much, and more is coming. And your mother told me you just bought Frank Sinatra's desk.
Oh yeah,
really?
We got the bar from his suite in Atlantic City. We got his desk. We got Jerry Blavitt's radio equipment. So we extend beyond
eclectic is the word. Eclectic. Yeah.
Exactly. Very eclectic. And there are tie-ins with sports with Frank Sinatra. Obviously, we've told the story about the golf clubs before, right, between him and Joe DiMaggio, which we can rehash at the museum. That will be a good story to tell when we're showing it.
The opening, I understand, is set for June 8th. And it's etched in stone this time. It moved a little. It was supposed to be the 15th, but something else was going on the 15th that interfered with that. So
it is the day before Father's Day, and a joint birthday party for my son's godfather's two kids.
Okay,
that's wonderful.
So June 8th, and we're coming over on the 6th. The entire crew from WWDB AM Talks 860, broadcasting live and in color. From the museum.
Thursday
the 6th, April 6th.
Absolutely. 6th. Oh, that's going to be wonderful.
You mentioned the Garden State Racetrack, and I think we should incorporate at some point. We don't have room right now, but we should incorporate something because that's history in the area. It's local, and it wouldn't be a bad idea.
Was some stuff sort of cast to the wind? I'm sure a lot of stuff may have been tossed, you know, in the final months and years of the parkway. But is there some stuff out there, Nick?
We would have to do some digging, but I think we can find people who might know, get some leads, who might know where we could get some memorabilia. Obviously, with the fire, it probably a lot was lost there, obviously. Yeah. But.
But then it was rebuilt, but that's not as historic. You know?
Not as historic. Yeah, exactly. But you know what? We haven't devoted much of the collection to horse racing. And we were talking about, I think like, was it a month ago, 2 months ago? We were talking about wrestling entertainment.
Right.
And how that would be a great concept to incorporate. Obviously, as Lou can attest, there's not much room to add displays, but we can. Over the years, I've talked about it's an evergreen effect. It's an evolving, living entity,
breathing thing.
Exactly.
Have you picked up anything new recently, or are you working on anything you could tell us about?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I'm having one of those senior moments right now. besides Frank Sinatra's desk, I know I'm forgetting something, but I believe we did have a new acquisition. I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
We'll get it next week, but
we're going to have to get your mother on instead of you. She remembers everything.
The Sixers have just gotten me all flustered recently.
We've been talking about that. It's been draining.
Well, if there's a miracle tonight and a miracle in the next outing, and then maybe there's some memorabilia that will come flying out of this series.
I would get anything from Tyrese Maxey, anything. Well, socks, shoes.
I can tell you there's some Knicks memorabilia available from this series that I don't know if we probably won't be bidding on it, but it's you never know. Unfortunately, the Knicks fans gave me a little sour taste in my mouth this series. So.
I'm with Lou. You on that.
You and Lou.
We talked about that earlier. Yeah. Are you going to the game tonight?
We will be at the game. Thankfully, a 9 o'clock start works well with our hours. So
yeah.
Because as anyone who's watching and has been to Franklin Cardio knows we work till the wee hours of the.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to be saying our prayers tonight. Keep in mind, the Depatchi Sports Museum and Learning Center will be opening Saturday, June 8th. We'll be going live from there on that Thursday before him. That is all the time we've got this week. We want to thank our guests, basketball coaching legend Fran Dunphy, horse race handicapper Jeff Nash, and of course, our king of sports collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr. And don't forget to buy Lou's recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Go to themuseumofsports.org. Lou will pen a personal greeting and a portion of the proceeds benefits the museum. The Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, and Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Lou.
These are the good old days.
All right. Go Sixers. We'll see everybody
go
next
Sixers.
Week.
Go Sixers.